Well, I see him on the TV. He preaching about the promised lands. He told me believe on Jesus. Stole the money from my hand. Well, some say he was a good man. Lord, I think he's seen him. Out of Vietnam, baby. If I lose them all on a foreign shore, the bands come to him, I want him back. The bullets took his best friend in Saigon, boys took his wife, this kid still regrets. In a time I don't remember, Lord, and a war he can't forget. He cried, forgive me for what I've done there. I never meant those things I did. To believe in. If there's a Lord above, you give me some to believe in. I said, Lord, alright. But this ain't my lonely man. Some home springs a hotel room. I got the call last Christmas evening. They told me the news. Tried all night not to break down and cry as the tears rolled down my face. I felt so cold and empty, like a lost soul out of place. And the mirror that's on the wall seemed a smile to be again. Give me something to believe in. Something to believe in.
Give me something to believe in.
Right. Sometimes I wish to God I didn't know now things I didn't know then. Oh, road you gotta take. By homeless sleeping on a cold dark street, like bodies in an open grave. Underneath the broken old neon sign, he used to read Jesus says. A mile away lay the rich folk, and I see how they're living it up. While the poor they eat from hand to mouth, rich drink from the golden cup. And it just makes me wonder, so many lose, so they win. Give me something to believe in.
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 Help me sing it, Charlie.
Something to believe in.
Jesus,
something to believe in.
Sometimes I wish to God I didn't know that things I didn't. and give me something to believe in.
Thanks for returning to Great Speeches and Interviews on Access Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman. Today's program is The World is a Battlefield. Jeremy Scahill reveals covert operations unknown to the public and carried out across the globe by men who do not exist on paper and will never appear before Congress. Raising questions about freedom and democracy, war and justice, morality and politics. Terrence McNally is the interviewer, journalist, and radio host. And then later, the U.S. and China strike a climate deal.
92% of Pashtun males in Afghanistan had never heard of 9/11. There was a poll that was conducted. I mean, it's a bit of a dated statistic. I think this was about 2 years ago, but it was 92% of Pashtun males had never heard of 9/11. I found it impossible to believe. I go to Afghanistan and found people that had never heard of the United States. They thought it was still the Soviet. So if you're dealing with just camouflaged men that are in your village and you've never heard of Bin Laden and anybody flying airplanes into buildings, if you never heard that story and you're there and these guys have come in and they were fighting some guys in your village, they've chased them out. Now they're staying. They're using infrared goggles. You think someone's taking pictures of your women. So you get together and you say, let's start ambushing these guys. So then you're attacking them. Well, the Americans are now there. And from their perspective, they're getting attacked by people that they can preemptively say are terrorists. So then they declare, okay, we don't know the name of this cell that's attacking us. Meanwhile, it's just, you know, the Sharafuddin family and their brothers. It's not a cell. It's some guys that don't want you there and are trying to kill you because you're violating their culture. So then you're in a situation where you've now determined that this Sharafuddin tribe, they need to go. And you start hunting for the leadership of the Sharaf. What does that mean? But this is happening all throughout Afghanistan. And the other thing that's happening is that Afghans are settling scores with one another by using our horrible human intelligence system. They know that you only need 3 human intelligence reports to allege that someone is a Taliban commander to result in a U.S. night raid happening. And it happens all the time. So someone's mad that their goats were stolen by somebody's uncle 10 years ago. And they're like, oh, I'm going to take care of him now. So then he gets 2 of his sons to go on 2 different days to tell the Americans that there's this Taliban home somewhere. And then he goes on the 3rd day or 4th day and he says, you know, I think that there's a suicide bombing being planned there. So then the Americans go out one night and their plan is to go in and to try to raid the place. They're not going in to try to kill anyone. I mean, that's not the intent. They're going in to try to raid it. And in the process of it, there's rustling on the roof. Someone comes out into the courtyard with their Kalashnikov because they think that they're getting robbed by someone. They fire a shot. They don't know they're shooting at a Navy SEAL. Boom, the whole house is taken down. And it's like, who's in the wrong there? The American soldiers think that they're going into a very dangerous situation. The Afghans in the house believe that someone's trying to violate their home, you know, and the whole thing started because someone tried to, you know, get their neighbor killed or harassed by the Americans. And we're being used like that all across the board.
That makes so much sense. This reminds me of the last time I had this kind of conversation was with Matthew Ho.
Oh yeah, who is a person that I've been in a multi-year dialogue with and is a character in my book.
Right, and he is the person
who's former State Department
working
official.
For the State Department and resigned rather than continue, and was the one who said this is basically a civil war. This is basically modernity versus the past. This is basically rural versus urban, and it plays itself out in the ways that Jeremy Scahill was just describing.
Right, and you talked about Vietnam, and I brought up the term counterinsurgency. You know, we've doubled down on our own failed policies and ideologies in these war zones, and you know the level of killing is not what's unprecedented. It's that we're like rake steppers. You know how if you step in your backyard and you your foot hits the rake and it comes up and whacks you in the head, we never move the rake from that position and we always forget where we've put it. And with our foreign policy, there's no new failures. There's only new technology and new years. But it's the same failures over and over and over again. And part of it is hubris. And part of it is that the military is encouraged by Congress to come up with definitions for victories. And body bags, body counts are, you know, is the metric of the day. Who have you killed in the Al-Qaeda organization? The president himself sort of cowboyishly said once, you know, if the Republicans doubt my resolve, just ask Osama bin Laden and the 22 other leaders that we've taken out. And it's, you know, they're spiking the football. These guys, I think, really believe that what they're doing is decimating these networks. And they have decimated some of them. But what's been the butterfly effect? We don't know yet. You know, remember when people, I mean, I remember getting these emails from people when the Saddam statue was pulled down, because I predicted that Iraq was going to turn into a horrid bloodbath and that there was going to be a massive insurrection against the U.S. And of course, that is what happened. And I had spent a lot of time in Iraq. I could see it coming. Firdow Square, you know, April 2003, Ahmed Chalabi and his, you know, goons pull down Saddam's statue. I get emails, look at how they love us and they're doing, it's just like what Paul Wolfowitz said. Within a year, there was a massive multi-ethnic, multi-religious uprising against the United States. And I think that we just utterly fail to realize that we are not the sort of smartest guys in the room all the time, you know. And
yeah.
You can listen to great speeches and interviews on accesssacramento.org, or you can go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
Your appetite for destruction can't be easy to defend. When all your heroes have abandoned you, or have you abandoned them? From civilians to enemies, bombs can't discern. They just destroy all in their path. Will we ever learn? How many Iraqis per gallon on this endless killing spree? How many kids can you kill and send the lower class the bill so you can drive your kids to soccer practice in your SUV? Whatever happened to your resolve? How did you join their ranks? Afraid of some Arab who can't even find reverse on a Russian tank. When the whole wide world is watching and they think that you're absurd, from Canada to East Asia, they're giving you the bird. How many Iraqis per gallon on this endless murder spree? How many people can you kill and send the working class the bill so you can drive your kids to soccer practice in your SUV? Don't you read the news and not just CNN? There are other news outlets not owned by our government. You can call me left-wing liberal, or you can call me communist. But are you totalitarian or just an anarchist? Go and follow your false prophet, that lying, greedy man. Doesn't have the intellect to run a hot dog stand. How many Iraqis per gallon on this endless murder spree? How many kids can you kill and send the working class the bill so you can drive your kids to soccer practice in your SUV? SUV, in your SUV, in your SUV.
Let me just read you a couple of quotes. This is you, Jeremy. They've killed heads of al-Qaeda in East Africa twice. They've killed a number three man in al-Qaeda probably a dozen times. All that's very true. But out of the ashes of all of this could rise a force that is much more difficult to deal with, that is disparate groups of people that have actual scores to settle with the United States. I think we're going to see more asymmetric war in our own country, and I think some of it is going to be inspired by what we've done over these past 10 to 12 years.
Yeah. I mean, I believe that. And, you know, I won't speculate on the motives of the people that set off the bombs at the Boston Marathon. I think we're living in a country right now where there is a not so tiny minority of people who seem to believe that the posse should be rounded up and the pitchforks taken out of storage and the torches lit to go and just hang people before we even present evidence against them. And there's a sort of bloodthirst that sets in, and we have a hyper militarized response to everything. It's not just the, you know, Wayne LaPierre and these goons from the NRA that are playing into this sort of fear rhetoric. It's also very respected members of the Republican Party, like Lindsey Graham and John McCain, who are talking about wanting Americans tried as enemy combatants. And I think that we are encouraging acts of terrorism against our country because of our foreign policy. It's not exclusively because of our foreign policy. There are people that want to kill us for their own obnoxious, disgusting reasons, but we're giving people a legitimate reason to want to harm us by drone bombing their country and killing innocent people. It's going to become a reality that there will be terrorism in the United States, I think on a larger scale than we've seen. And how we respond to that as a nation is going to say a lot about what kind of a country we are.
In other words, if I may, the way we responded to the last big one,
right,
and have continued and as you say, doubled down, is going to lead to more. And I really fear for that, because if civil liberties and the rule of law are so peripheral to how we're behaving now, if another big one happens,
it doesn't even have to be that big. I mean, look at the hysteria when the so-called underwear bomber, the guy who failed to set his underpants on fire on Christmas Day 2009, there was the same thing. It's, we want him as an enemy combatant, and the school shootings happen. Oh, we have to have weapons in the schools now to protect the kids. But after 9/11, and we all know this history so well now, look at what Congress did. They give Bush a blank check in the form of what's called the authorization for the use of military force to pursue a borderless war, to hunt down anyone in any way connected to the 9/11 attacks. President Obama continues to use the AUMF to this day.
That's what I was going to say. I bet people do not know that. The justification for what we do in Yemen, what we do in Somalia,
exactly,
what we're doing anywhere in far-flung, is that same vote that, as we know, so many Democrats have disowned
only
after
one,
the fact.
Only one Democrat, only one person in the entire Congress voted against it. And it was
Feingold?
It was Barbara Lee.
Oh, Barbara Lee.
Yeah, no, Feingold voted for it. He voted against the Patriot Act. He was the only senator to vote against the Patriot Act. But Barbara Lee was the only one. And I quote her speech in my book because it's a devastating, painful speech to read, where she is, I mean, can you imagine in that, 1 week after 9/11,
having the courage to do what she did?
Oh, my God. And she was trembling. When she, I went back and watched it. It was, I mean, she was a pariah for what she did. And she was right.
What I was going to say is that vote, which in some ways has now, we realize, was done because of hysteria, because of political calculation, is still being used to expand. Now,
in
what
some
I want
to target people who were toddlers on 9/11,
exactly,
which is to me that's our most
exactly
obnoxious aspect.
What I'd like you to talk about, because we don't have time to go into all the details and so on, but basically, I'm going to let you talk about the book you haven't written yet, the one about the Democrats and the Republicans.
I don't know that I'll ever be able to write it.
You know what I'm talking about, is comparing, if you will, what happened or tracing kind of the evolution of what happened under the Bush and what's happened under Obama and where we stand today.
Right. Well, so, you know, so this AUMF is passed in 2001 with enthusiastic Democratic support. And there's been very little work done on Capitol Hill outside of a small circle of people in trying to actually confront the implications of that for our society. The Patriot Act also is another case of that where you know, you have this thing passed that is just an incredible targeting of our civil liberties. And then the National Defense Authorization Act, the NDAA, which President Obama has signed into law, that has some very disturbing components of it that seem to indicate that people can be Americans can be detained indefinitely without charge. And, you know, I'm concerned as someone who does talk at times to armed militants that want to attack the United States, which I think journalists should when we're covering this story. I mean, could I get slapped with some allegation that I'm supporting
material
terrorism
support
or whatever? Yeah, I mean, it's I got to know the Al-Laki family very well. Anwar al-Awlaki, of course, this American citizen who was killed in a U.S. drone strike in Yemen. And he was involved with all sorts of bad stuff. And I think he said and did things that were reprehensible. To me, it's not about who he is as much as who we are. Like, what do we do with the most reprehensible of our citizens? That's how your society is defined.
And just to say something that you've said many times, it's that they deserve, according to our Constitution,
the
rights to have evidence put forward and defend themselves, and that this entire drone assassination program basically says the president is
judge, jury, and executioner. Right. And it's and you know, we do these things called signature strikes where we don't even know the identities of the people that we're killing. They're called signature strikes. And it basically is, if you live in a certain area of Yemen and you're a male between the ages of 16 and 70, you're a military-aged male, and you've had any contact whatsoever with someone who the United States is watching and believes to be a terrorist, and you're with a group of other young men, they will preemptively decide that you are terrorists and kill you. And it's happened repeatedly. It started in Pakistan, and then President Obama gave authority for the CIA to conduct those operations in Yemen. It's a form of sort of pre-crime, except it's not pre-crime because we're not even sure that they're going to commit a crime. So we're targeting, intentionally targeting people who are not shooting at our soldiers on a battlefield, whose identities we don't even know, whose names we don't know, and who about whom we have no actual evidence that they're involved with terrorist activity or plotting terrorist attacks.
Basically, it's all based on sort of association. They seem to hang with someone who we suspect.
Right, exactly. It's like the hallmarks of potential terrorists. And so we're committing these sort of, you know, we've committed ourselves to trying to preemptively take out people who might one day become something bad, which is, if that's what you want your policy to be, or if you want the Tsarnaev kid to be sent to Guantanamo, then don't ever start talking again about how America is the sort of shining city on the hill and the beacon of freedom around the world, or is run by the rule of law. Say that you live in a different country. But to directly answer your question, what I think is something that people have slept on that they don't fully understand from Bush to Obama is that even if they repeal the AUMF, the Authorization for the Use of Military Force, which I think liberals are going to start a campaign and they'll probably win that eventually because I think it'll have mainstream appeal. We love false solutions in our society. We act as though we're doing something when we're really not.
And this is one that you think has the smell of a false solution.
Yeah. I mean, there are even some friends of mine who have shows on MSNBC and stuff. They think that that's a winnable campaign. And it is a winnable campaign because it's not going to actually stop anything.
What makes it winnable.
Right. It makes it winnable is that it's largely a sort of cosmetic thing. But Article 2 of the Constitution, the commander-in-chief authorities, Cheney and Rumsfeld spent their entire career in government and in the private sector working on putting forward policies that would make the executive branch essentially a dictatorship when it came to foreign policy or national security policy. And they wanted to relegate Congress to basically just funding the operations. Congress could do oversight of the funding and the expenditures, but not of the operations themselves. And they, you know, Cheney thought that Iran-Contra not only wasn't a scandal, but was the model for how the U.S. should conduct its foreign policy. Cheney was a congressman at the time that Iran-Contra happened and wrote the minority report saying this was a great thing. This is a heroic action. Obama, being a constitutional law professor, I think a lot of people thought he's going to try to dismantle that dictatorship of the executive branch stuff and is going to really push back and allow Congress to once again retain the exclusive authority to declare war. And he has not done that at all. He has doubled down on the interpretation of Article 2 being the sort of supreme document giving him authority to wage war around the world. And I think one of the enduring legacies of the Obama presidency is going to be legitimizing and normalizing for a lot of liberals assassination once again, because it has been before in U.S. history, a central part of what's called U.S. national security policy.
And now for something completely different.